This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscowane. This hour, we're looking at vacation and why Americans don't seem to take enough of it compared to their fellow workers in other wealthy nations, and why time off is good for us, even essential. Joining us by phone is John Schmidt, senior economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Hi, John. You there?
I'm here, yep.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good. And from the Washington Post studios, Bridget Schulte, Washington Post social issues reporter and author of Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. Welcome, Bridget.
Thanks so much for having me.
So when I first started in radio, and this was quite a while back, a coworker told me she got to take 6 weeks of vacation every year when she lived in her home country of Germany, and that probably included holidays. But she was taken aback by the relatively small amount she was offered here. And decades later, things haven't changed much. John, let's turn to you first. Why are we relatively stingy when it comes to vacation time here in America?
Well, I think the standard view is that somehow we have a kind of cultural preference for working very hard and not taking time off, and I just don't think that's true. I think if you look at the differences between, you know, us and countries that have a lot of vacation, I don't think that we love our children any less. I don't think we like to spend time at the beach any less. I think what it is we have both a legal system and a set of work norms that reinforce the idea that people who take vacation are not working as hard as they should, and that I think is a problem. We have much more economic insecurity in the United States than a lot of other countries, and so workers don't get vacation. About a quarter don't. But even many workers who do get it don't take it because they're afraid to take it. They're afraid that it's going to affect their probabilities of getting a promotion or keeping their job if there's a downturn in the economy. So people are afraid, and I think that's an important issue.
And we're going to explore that a little more fully as we go along in the show. But on a practical level, vacation time here is determined by companies and union agreements, and it's mandated by the government across the pond, no?
Yeah, we looked at 21 rich countries that have a standard of living and a kind of democratic system along the lines of what we have. And what is very striking is, as you say, here it entirely depends on your employer. And in the rest of the world, essentially every worker, part-time, full-time, low-wage, high-wage, is guaranteed a minimum that is well above what is the standard even for our high-wage workers in the United States. So as you mentioned, in Europe, the members of the European Union have a requirement that all employers provide 20 paid vacation days as a minimum, and many countries and many employers provide above that.
Bridget, time off, it's good for us, isn't it?
It really is. There's actually a lot of very interesting research, or science, if you will, of vacation. And I think the ironic thing here, and it fits exactly into what John is saying, is that most of the best research is done in Europe, because that's where people actually take vacation. Mm-hmm. But what they've found is that there are very strong correlations between taking vacation, taking time off that's relaxing, that isn't sort of a manic, crazy vacation like we tend to take here in the United States, but a relaxing, unplugged time away, and your own physical health, the health of your family members. There's a new study that I wrote about recently in the Washington Post that found that when everybody takes vacation together, sort of at the same time, that you come back and it's almost like a contagion of happiness and good feeling, and that you have more time for each other. You're not as worried that you're missing something at work because everyone else is taking vacation. This was a study done in Sweden when the entire country takes pretty much the entire month of July off. And in the United States, the only time we might have that's somewhat similar is that week between Christmas and New Year's, when really more out of tradition, a lot of companies do either close down or, if not close down, they actually kind of slow down. And so that people don't have that sense that, oh my goodness, I'm missing something.
Sure.
And that sort of anxiety is not so much there.
I'm trying to get my head wrapped around the concept of the office empty for the entire month of July. And as an American, I'm having a hard time doing that. I'd like to zero in for a moment on one word that you used, unplugging. It's really hard to unplug when we ostensibly go on vacation.
There are so many studies that show that we take work along with us, or if we don't take work along with us, we almost obsessively check into our emails. And I think one of the things that I find disturbing, and I actually find myself doing, is that one of the reasons we check email is because we dread coming back to a huge crammed inbox, and we're just worried about feeling so far behind. And so we kind of check it as we go. And that seems to give people a little bit of a release. But isn't that a horrible thing that, you know, you're so worried about what you're going to come back to that you can't fully be where you are?
Sure. Let's, for a moment, examine who gets vacation in this country. I think, John, you alluded to the fact that in Europe, most, if not everybody, gets some sort of vacation, no matter what type of job you're doing. Here, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 77% of American workers get paid vacation, but certain jobs are more likely to include it than others. John?
Yeah, full-time workers are much more likely to get paid vacation than part-time workers, for example. But I think what's interesting to me is that the vacation inequality kind of mirrors a lot of the broader inequality we have. So workers who are in, say, the top 25% of the pay distribution are very likely to have vacation, over 90% in most cases. But people in the bottom fourth are much less likely, less than half. I think that goes to this widening inequality we've had in the country, and it's reinforced on vacation time. Now, of course, what happens with people in the top fourth is that some of them feel so much economic pressure, so much competition, that they don't take all the vacation that they're given, which is another problem. And Bridget was certainly mentioning that, and I think that's an important one, too.
Sure. Do you think the perception that if I leave the office, somebody is breathing down my neck, waiting to take my job, if I leave the office, if I don't check my emails, I might be in danger of losing my job, is that a real perception, John?
I think that that's a very important issue here, because one of the other big differences between, say, the United States and Europe is that it's much more difficult for employers to fire or even lay off workers without good cause and without paying some sort of severance pay. So workers, I think, feel much more secure and, as a result, are willing to take advantage of things like vacation policy because they don't feel like they're going to be penalized for it down the line. The other issue is we have much more inequality. So the difference between, say, a manager and an assistant manager here can be quite a big difference in pay. In European countries where they have less economic inequality, if you don't get that promotion to the next level, if you're not there till 9 o'clock every night, if you're not going working through August to avoid a vacation to show what a hard worker you are, you might not get the promotion to manager, but the penalty for not doing that as less. So I think there's a lot in the economic structure that we have here that reinforces both people not getting any vacation at the bottom, but people not taking it at the top.
And in this country, those low-wage workers who are not necessarily getting vacation, there's just that much more stress. Bridget?
Oh, absolutely. When you look at stress and anxiety, the World Health Organization actually has rated the United States as the most anxious country in the world. That's really startling when you think about what a wealthy country we are and our standard of living. But there is a lot of really good research that shows that constant overwork, that feeling that you can never get away, that you're constantly anxious about your place and whether you're getting ahead or you can even make ends meet, that has serious health effects. We're actually sicker than a lot of our people in other wealthy countries, kind of with a similar rich economies. We are much sicker, and we die earlier, and we die younger. I think that there's quite a bit of evidence that shows the way that we're living and working really is pretty unsustainable.
There are a lot of us who don't take the vacation time that we're given. A Harris Interactive survey found that in 2011, 57% of U.S. workers had unused vacation time at the end of the year. And I think we all know folks like that. John? Or Bridget? Go ahead, Bridget.
I was just going to say Expedia. It's really interesting. What you have now is the U.S. travel and tourism industry starting to jump into the fray, and almost they're putting out, they've got ads and they've got YouTube videos. They're trying to get people to take vacation. Expedia puts out what they call the Vacation Deprivation Survey every year. And in 2013, I think their most recent survey is the Americans left something like 577 7 million days of unused vacation on the table. So we're not taking, we have very little vacation to begin with, and what little we have, we don't take.
Is there any sense of a response to that that activity?
Is it too early?
Whether there's a response, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. The Las Vegas, they began their ads a couple of years ago, and they had sort of this Norma Rae type commercial where a woman stood up on her desk and said, I have 40 days of unused vacation. That's crazy. I work nights. I work weekends. Let's all take our vacation now. And she like lifts up the sign that says vacation now, just like Norma Rae did, Union Now. And everybody sort of runs away and turns out their lights, and they ignore her. Uh-huh. So the advocate campaigns have been going on for a while, and I don't think that they've had much effect.
Well, I was going to get to that. Americans, in general, of course, seem to take a sort of pride in being considered a workaholic society. John?
Well, I think that, as I said earlier, I don't think that we enjoy our free time less than other countries. The workaholic stuff, I think, actually flows from the pressures that people feel around job insecurity and economic inequality. And I think what's interesting about the ad campaigns and about proposed legislation to give the United States vacation is that it goes to the problem of unilateral disarmament. You know, if you're the person who stands up on the desk and says, I'm taking my vacation, and you walk out in a context where the norm and the legal standards don't reinforce that, you're taking a big risk. Whereas if you can get everybody to go ahead and take vacation, and that's the norm and that's expected, and every single person in the country gets it, then I think it becomes a much more realistic possibility. I think it's an uphill battle, and I think it's going to take some time. But I do think it's something that we need to solve together, and not by individual sort of, you know, making the decision this year I'm going to be different. I think that's important, and they should, and it's good for them. But it's not the way we're going to change the whole society.
Well, and that leads into my next question. What are the odds that the government here might do something to legislate vacation time?
You know, to be perfectly honest, back in the 1930s, there were proposals in the Fair Labor Standards Act to have a minimum wage, to have a 40-hour work week, and to have a minimum of 2 to 3 weeks of paid vacation every year. So in the whole negotiations, the business lobby got the paid vacation taken out, and so what we were left with is minimum wage and the 40-hour work week, and that was 1938, and our labor laws have not changed since then.
John, do you think that today, in our stressed-out society, there might be some more success?
Well, I think that's a very good point to focus on the fact that historically the United States was actually one of the leaders on these kinds of time-related issues. If you go back to the 19th century and even into this, into the 20th century, now that we're in the 21st, U.S. Workers, U.S. labor movement, U.S. politicians were big in pushing for going to the 10-hour workday, then the 8-hour workday. And I think, you know, we have a tradition there. You know, we talk about, you've seen the bumper sticker, probably unions, the people who bought you the weekend, and that's a result of, you know, political and economic activity back, you know, in the last century.
John, I'm going to have to stop you there because we're up against a break. John is senior economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Bridget Schulte is Washington Post social issues reporter. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscoane on Radio Times. We'll be back to talk about vacation in just a moment.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. Continuing education at PAFA offers Saturday classes for high school students to develop their artistic skills and build a strong portfolio of work under the guidance of PAFA's esteemed faculty. It's an opportunity to learn everything from classical painting to drawing for comics and animation, as well as the principles of composition and perspective. Registration now for fall classes. Details online at pafa.edu/cefall.
I'm Jesse Thorne. Some musicians get a little prickly when their stuff is sampled in other newer songs. Not Daryl Hall.
These kids came up to us, they had a boombox, and they said, check this out, man, check this out. Our friends used you on a song. And they played me Say No Go on the boombox as I was standing there on the stage. And we said, wow, that's really cool. I mean, that's really amazing.
Daryl Hall, half of Hall & Oates, in the next Bullseye from NPR.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY. the latest healthcare developments.
How what happens in Washington affects you.
How world events affect us all.
The news continues throughout your day. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. We are your co-hosts for Here and Now. Breaking news, thoughtful analysis, surprising interviews in the middle of your day.
With voices from all across the country so you won't miss a thing.
That's Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times. We're talking about why vacation is seemingly so hard for many of us to use up our vacation days, why we take our work along with us. What are your thoughts on vacation? Do you find it hard to cut the cord when you get away? Our number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in today for Marty Moskowain on Radio Times. Bridget Schulte is the author of Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. And John Schmidt is senior economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. John, I wanted to jump back in to the concept of legislating vacation. If vacation were to be legislated, there would be consequences. No, I mean, employers would have to spend more money, and then they might end up hiring fewer people or paying less. Can you get into that a bit?
Yeah, I think it's important to keep in mind that the costs involved here are typically not that high. So if, for example, you have a 52-week year and you decide that there should be a law that says people should have 2 weeks of vacation, that's a little less than 4% of total costs for labor two weeks out of 52. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that could be phased in over a few years, and it would make a big difference. The other thing that's important to keep in mind is that most employers already do provide something close to that. So the main benefit of a minimum would be to help the workers typically at the bottom of the wage distribution right now that don't have those benefits. And the other benefit would be that it would create, laws help to create norms. It helps to say, hey, this is a legal right that we have, and that, I think, helps to change the mindset a little bit and might get people who have vacation now that don't use it to start thinking that it's something that they should do or can do.
John, let's switch gears just a bit. You yourself call yourself a 90% worker. What's that?
Well, I work 90% of a schedule. I get paid 90% as a result of that. But I don't work 90% of the weeks of the hours of the week. I work 90% of the days of the year. So I typically take 3 or 4 weeks off in the summertime and 3 or 4 weeks off around Christmas time, and then smatterings of days here and there in the rest of the year. It's something I believe in, but as I said, unilateral disarmament isn't the best way to do it. I'm sure I would be a little bit more successful in my career relative to other people if I worked all the time. So I pay a price for it to a certain degree. Although I get to be on Radio Times and talk about policy, so I can't be doing too badly.
Okay. That's good. But so when you take 3 or 4 weeks off at a time, though, what does this do for you?
Well, Bridget, I think, emphasized this difficulty with unplugging, and I certainly experienced that. I enjoy it a lot. It made a big difference. It's very helpful, but it's difficult to completely unplug. The fear of the giant inbox when I get back is probably the worst thing. But I think it's better to do that than to not do that. It's worked for me so far, but I can't recommend it to everybody. I'd rather recommend, that we have a national policy like, say, the European Union that says everybody should have 20 days. I think that would be a real step in the right direction.
All right. The calls are coming in. We're talking about vacation, and we're comparing the United States with other developed and wealthy nations, particularly in Europe. They tend to take a lot more vacation. Joshua joins us from Society Hill. Hi, Joshua.
Yeah, hi. You talked earlier about kind of societal norms in the United States, and I'm wondering how you can overcome something like that when, the President of the United States takes vacation and he's the subject of ridicule on The Daily Show when something happens anywhere in the world, or a CEO goes on vacation, a crisis hits his company, and he's the subject of ridicule on the news.
Good
if
point.
That's going to happen in society, how do you convince people to take vacation?
Thanks, Joshua, for the call. What do you think, Bridget?
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Yeah, you know, we do have, and I think that that lends itself to that notion that we're this work devoted culture, and that that's what we value. And I think John's very right. A lot of that comes from the historical legacy, if you will. And we're trying to make the best with what we've got. But you know, what's really interesting, and I think what people can really hold on to is look to the science. You know, there was a long study done of 2,000 middle aged men over 9 years, and they found that those people who had taken regular time off, who had taken vacation, they actually lowered their risk of heart attack and death. So that's huge. So I think that you can look at the science. There's also some pretty compelling science that when you do take time off and you take breaks, you do come back refreshed and more productive. And so that it actually is a business case, if you will, that you can make that. There is nothing creative or innovative you're going to get out of a burned out worker. And if you're just sitting there, pretty much all you can do is answer emails. You're not really doing very creative and powerful work, which is what you would argue most businesses and companies want.
So then, John, are European countries in general more productive than we are?
Many European countries are just as productive as we are, and a few a tiny bit above, a few a little bit below. I think it's difficult to spot the differences, and I think that they managed to do that quite well. One thing that I think goes to this cultural issue that is helpful to think about is, you know, some of the highest performers in our society, the people who we just know work extremely hard and excel at what they do, are professional athletes. And they all have off seasons when they ratchet it back, when they don't do two-a-day workouts, and they know that they need that recovery time. Or you'll hear people talking about the need for breaks between games, and if there's a longer break for one team because of the way the schedule worked out, that makes a difference on the day that those same two teams meet. So, you know, I think we understand the importance of rest and recovery, and I would hope that the president and CEOs are getting the rest that they need to run the country and to run the companies in the same way that professional athletes do. So I don't think it's that hard of a stretch. It just requires a little bit of reimagination of work.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Jean is from Pennington, New Jersey. She's joining us live on Radio Times. Welcome, Jean.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm one of those people who has a hard time taking time off that I get. As a pastor, my denomination requires 4 weeks vacation minimum and 2 weeks study leave, which is a wonderful benefit. But I worked at a working class church, and nobody in my congregation gets that kind of a benefit. And I find it very hard to take that much time off.
Well, how much do you normally take, Jean?
Probably about half of what I get. I'm, 2 weeks. Vacation and maybe 1 week study leave.
And I'm guessing as a pastor, you work long days and long weeks, and you probably need it?
Oh, pastors have very high burnout rates, and I think it's because we do work 24/7, and we get the middle of the night calls, and usually we just get one day off a week, and we work most nights with meetings and every weekend. So, yeah, I mean, there's a part of me that says, yeah, I ought to take it. And then, you go on vacation and one of your most beloved parishioners passes away and you're not able to be there for the funeral. And so, you just feel torn.
So, Jean, let me
it's hard to get away.
Let me just jump in and thank you very much for the call. This kind of leads to Bridget. Something you addressed a moment ago, and that's burnout. According to something called the Maslach Burnout Inventory, which is used to assess burnout, it's defined, and emotionally you just can't face another day. You're certainly not mm-hmm. as productive. And in looking at the Netherlands, looking at the Dutch, a professor of psychology in the Netherlands says, the increase can be attributed at least in part to people who are struggling to balance work and home life. And does this ring true to you?
Oh, absolutely. That's why I wrote the book called Overwhelmed. because that's such a ubiquitous feeling, particularly in the United States, where our laws and our culture, our attitudes and our policies are really out of sync with the way that we live right now. There are really very few policies, laws, even our attitudes that would help ease that juggle, if you will. The world has changed enormously, and yet the structure of our society haven't really caught up with that. That sense of burnout, that disengagement, you look at surveys and polls, Gallup and Harris, they'll, you know, something like 3/4 of people, working people that they've surveyed, say that they feel disengaged and burned out at work. That's it's surprising then that we're as productive as we are. I think that people are really, I think I wrote in my book, burning the candle at both ends and out the middle.
John Schmidt, I just wanted to point out that in the Netherlands, if a doctor determines a worker is suffering the symptoms of burnout for more than a half year, that worker must receive paid time off. Obviously, the Netherlands it's structured much differently than it is here. But what do you think about that concept?
Well, I like the idea that there's a recognition of the fact that our policies have direct impacts on people's health. And, you know, when we look at vacation, it's not just vacation where we lag. We also have no requirement in the United States for paid sick days. I mean, there are a few states and cities now that have them, but they are not. It's not part of our federal legal system. We also have no requirement for paid family and medical leave. We have a paid family. We have a Family and Medical Leave Act, but those benefits aren't paid. So there's a whole host of areas where we lag the rest of the world. These are completely standard policies in every other country that we looked at, not just vacation. So I think that link is important, and I think driving home the health care implications of all of this is a key part of it as well.
Again, do you see that happening in this country, change over the next decade, say, to embrace some of those concepts?
I think that there's a grassroots movement now to address, for example, paid sick days. We have a number of cities. The state of Connecticut just became a state that provides a requirement that employers give paid sick days. There's talk in New Jersey of that happening right now, for example. I do think that there's a response, and I think people are feeling overwhelmed. They are feeling that they've got to do something because the situation we're in right now is unsustainable. It's an uphill battle for sure, but I do think we're having a conversation right now that I think is part of getting to where we want to be.
We are talking about vacation on Radio Times today. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moscow-Wayne. If you'd like to join the conversation, 888-477-9499, or you can send us an email at WHYY or radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Joanne is standing by from Clinton, New Jersey. Hello, Joanne.
Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I have listened to your commentary, and I see that many people are comparing the U.S. to European cultures and the organizations there, and I think we need to focus on the differences in employment situations. The Europeans have employment contracts that protect them. They also have more socialized retirement programs. We are always working because we don't know what's going to happen in our future. We are pressed to ensure that we're performing so we can keep our job. And believe me, I'm the person who has had 20 days of vacation and has not taken it. Mm-hmm. So I certainly understand that.
Thanks for the call, Joanne, to Radio Times. John Schmidt, her comments ringing true?
Yeah, that seems to me to be exactly the story. As it's not a question of our cultural preference for working hard. I think we do like to work hard, but plenty of Europeans like to work hard too. I don't think the Germans, for example, that the national character is one that people think of, associate with people not working hard. And I think it goes to the idea of job insecurity, of economic inequality, and of the insecurity that Joanne's mentioning now about retirement security. You know, we have Social Security here, but that's only one part of our retirement package, and the private pension part is, for most people, you know, sorely lacking.
Let's talk about an interesting concept, and we might have touched on this just a bit earlier on. It's called the protected weekend, and it all started last year when Goldman Sachs encouraged young bankers to take Saturdays off. Saturdays. I guess those are the folks who put in the ridiculous hours, 60, 70 hours a week and more. Then J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and others started mandating one protected weekend off per month for young bankers. So do we see some give in what have been workaholic professions? John?
I think that this goes to a recognition that it's unsustainable, and even from a business perspective, this is not a system that's working. I'm very concerned about the situation of Goldman Sachs bankers, for example, but I also think that we have to look at what the stress situations are for, say, the bottom fourth of the U.S. Wage distribution that doesn't get any paid vacation at all. Those groups face enormous stress. I mean, I have a fairly flexible job. If I need to stay home and do something around the cable TV, I can work from home and my boss isn't going to be upset. But I have a service sector job and I need to be at the restaurant or at the shop. I don't have that same kind of flexibility. That's why it's, I think, so important that we enact policies that allow everybody across the board to get vacation and to deal with the stresses that they have in their own life.
Bridget Schulte?
Absolutely. You know, it goes back to that sense of you're going to feel better, you're going to feel entitled or that you have permission to take time off, to care for yourself, to connect with your family, to be healthy, to enjoy your life. You're going to feel better about that if everybody else has that same opportunity. You know, to go back to what the pastor was saying, just to, in that very sense of inequality, it makes you feel terrible. That makes you feel guilty to take time off. And we already feel guilty leaving our work. And then if you're taking time off and nobody else gets to or will, it just creates these tensions that increase the stress.
And interestingly, too, the concept of the protected weekend, not all of these young bankers want to take protected weekends. The bonuses, I guess, to make everything even out are not as big as they used to be, so they're afraid of not getting as much money, and they're also afraid of the perception that they're not working as hard as they need to. John?
Yeah, I think that's exactly the issue. When you have a norm and an expectation that gets reinforced and reinforced, it's very hard to work against that. There probably are always going to be sectors of the economy where tons of money are on the line, like a situation like that, where it's going to be hard to push back and really change things. But I think for probably 90 or 95% of us, we do have a little bit more leeway, a little bit more room for maneuver. And I do think that with the right sets of laws or the right set of discussions, and I think we can probably push back and change things a little bit for the better.
Bridget Schulte, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to add one thing. You know, one of the other callers talked about how we make fun of CEOs and presidents when they take time off. But, you know, that's really critical. When you look at organizational cultures, the leadership sets the tone, sets the culture for that whole organization. And if the leadership works on the weekends, if the leadership is there until 11 o'clock, 12, 1 in the morning, if the leadership never takes vacation, then that sets the tone, that sets the norm that nobody else can, or they will never move up in the ranks. So what leaders do, not just what they say, what the policies say, what leaders do really matters.
We're coming up in a break, but quickly, Bridget, with folks who work these incredibly long hours, over 70 hours a week, what are some signs of burnout?
exhausted.
So I think we have to tell them, right?
right. Well, you're exhausted. You kind of drag into work. It's very difficult to focus. You're not able to pay a whole lot of attention. You don't have a lot of creative spark. So sometimes you'll go to the easier things to do, which, again, a lot of people spend a lot of time opening emails and answering them because it's a very low energy kind of thing to do. If you're spending a whole lot of time on your email, you're probably burned out.
All right, we've got to take that break as promised. I'd like to thank John Schmidt for joining us. He's senior economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
And Bridget Schulte is with us for the rest of the hour. She's the author of the book, Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowain. Be right back.
Rider University supports WHYY. Rider invites listeners to learn about how its executive MBA program can help professionals leverage their business experience into greater leadership roles in their organizations. Rider is hosting an information session in Princeton, New Jersey on August 9th. Information is available online at rider.edu/EMBA or 609-896-5036. Rider University, preparing tomorrow's business leaders.
On the next Fresh Air, Jonathan Lethem. His latest novel, Dissident Gardens, follows three generations of a radical leftist family, somewhat like his own. He grew up in a quasi-commune where at meetings,
adults would air out their grievances to 8-year-old children as if we were all equally entitled to suffer one another's complaints. And I kind of loved it.
Join us
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Go tell it on the mountain. In the name of humanity, come to our rescue. Come to our rescue. An appeal from innocent civilians trapped on a mountain in Iraq and caught in a religious war. And a community in Lincoln, Nebraska reaches out from the other side of the world. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking about vacation and why many Americans can't just seem to take all the vacation that they're given. And if they do go away, they take their cell phones with them, they take their computers with them, and etc. If you'd like to call us, the number is 888-477-9499. Our email is radiotimes@whyy.org or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Our guest for the final portion of this hour is Bridget Schulte. She is author of the book Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. She's an award-winning journalist for The Washington Post and The Washington Post Magazine. Bridget, you write that in understanding leisure time, there are certain broad principles to consider, and one of them is money really can't buy happiness or time.
That's very true. And I think that's a really important thing to think about when we've been talking about our long work hours culture here in the United States, where we work among the longest hours of any advanced economy. So much of what we do is very much tied to money. I was talking with John DeGraff, who runs an organization called Take Back Your Time. And he's working with the travel industry, trying to promote the idea that people should take their vacations. There is one state that actually has some legislation pending to create at least a statewide vacation policy in Washington State. Unfortunately, it hasn't gone very far. But what's very interesting is what he'll say is when he's done an awful lot of research and surveys that Americans tend to say, if I have the choice between time or money, I'll choose money. And so some of this is our economic insecurity. We're in an awful lot of debt. Wages have stagnated since the 1970s. Costs have gone up. So that there are real economic pressures that make it difficult for us to choose that time.
And yet, this kind of goes into what Facebook comment from Adriana. She says, I love and use each and every vacation day. They are necessary to recharge and relax. And you write that making time for leisure to refresh your soul is critical for living a good life.
It's really interesting. When I began working on the book, my view was probably very much like most Americans, which was, well, leisure time is for wimps, right? And work is what's important. And that's a very strong part of our culture here in the United States. We value hard work, and I do as well. But we've sort of spilled over into overwork and overdoing, and we've really lost the sense that leisure is valuable. We tend to think our time needs to be productive, and our time we need to be doing things. And I think what's very interesting is that neuroscience is showing us that when we are idle, our brains are actually most active and open to creativity. That aha moment, the inspiration comes not when you have your nose to the grindstone, but in a break in the action. That there are natural breaks that are just like we sleep in 90-minute sleep cycles, we actually have 90-minute attentiveness cycles. Mm. And if you do not give your brain a break after about 90 minutes, it's going to take a break on its own and get distracted, and you want to check Facebook. And sure. So it's very hard to stay on task. So I think the other thing that's very important that I had to learn is that really since the dawn of time, of human time, that it's really been in our leisure time, that time away from the drudgery of work, that civilization has been created. That's when art and philosophy, great thoughts, if you will, literature, all of that has come in a sort of time out of time, if you will.
You know, Bridget, this show on vacation has really struck a nerve. We've got a lot of telephone calls, so we're going to get to them. Let's go to Rob in Springfield, Pennsylvania. Hello, Rob.
Good morning. Great call today. I'd like to add something to the conversation, and my frame of reference is I've been in the employment agency business for 15 years, skilled IT workers, and quite frankly, this really is all about profit. Vacation is, what I think a lot of people forget is vacation is part of non-monetary compensation, and if employers see fit to grant it, we should take that time, and if we don't, we're losing part of our comp. Other things I've seen over the past 15 years is that banking time at work is being phased out, again, to clean up the balance sheet. And in a macro sense in the U.S., I think there's been just deliberate policy decisions that have created worker insecurity. And with all this, profits remain at all-time highs. That's what's really disgusting about this.
So there's a disincentive to offer vacation, Bridget? And thanks, Rob, for the call.
Certainly. Thank you.
Well, and I think that John talked an awful lot about sort of our economic structure, if you will. We have very weak unions. We don't have a lot of the labor agreements that, say, countries in the EU do. I did some work in Denmark when I was reporting on my story, and one of the things really struck me there, you know, Denmark is often seen as or rated as one of the happiest countries in the world, and I went there because the people have so much leisure time, and women in particular, and mothers have the most leisure time of any women and mothers in the world. And I wanted to understand why, because particularly in this country, women and mothers don't. There's a big leisure gap between men and women, and mothers in the United States spend almost all of their leisure time with their kids, so they don't have that, what the Greeks would say, pure leisure to refresh your soul. But one of the things that struck me about Denmark is they said that sense of, I'm never going to have to be out sleeping on a bench because I know that there are structures that will, you know, that I'll find jobs, and then if I don't find a job, I'll be protected until I find a new job. And I think the caller's right. In the United States, there is a lot of insecurity. They don't have that same feeling here.
And just briefly, because we do have a lot of calls, but you do write about the fact that when you take vacation, especially if you're taking vacation and you're taking it with children, you need to really carve out some time for yourself so you're truly away from everything and you're not working.
Well, it's funny. There's a lot of women that I spoke to. They said, you know, I go on vacation and it's just as much work as being at home.
Sure.
Because they're trying to take everybody's emotional temperature. They're doing the logistics and the activities and the planning. And one woman said, I came back from vacation and I drove myself crazy just, you know, because I did everything that I still always do. So to have that real sense of vacation, there's leisure studies that say you have to have two things, a sense of choice and control over your time. And what you really need to do is almost take a moment's pause before you go on vacation and think about what do you really need out of that time, and then almost schedule it and make sure it happens.
Okay, standing by is Kathy in Newark, Delaware. Hi, Kathy. Welcome to Radio Times. Kathy?
Are you there?
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to respond to something that speaker said earlier about opening and responding to emails being a low energy, not very productive thing to do. And I'm responding on behalf of my husband, who has an incredibly high stress job, and he's actually currently in England at the end of a 2.5-week vacation with our daughter and grandkids because he has to get away from his job in order to recharge. But much of what he does every day is open and respond to emails, and every email is a potential crisis that he has to then get on the phone or go talk to somebody or jump in his car and go somewhere and fix it. So he would be outraged to hear somebody say that opening and responding to emails was a low-energy, non-productive waste of his time, as it were.
Oh, no,
and
no,
I
no.
I should say he runs the Community Mental Health and Substance Abuse Programs for the state of Delaware.
Any thoughts, Bridget? Go ahead, Kathy. Wait.
I was just going to say, there's just crisis after crisis after crisis. And when he goes away every summer for a vacation, and I stay behind because we have an adult son with disabilities, he goes places where he can't be on his email and he can't be reached by phone so that he can get a break. But when he comes back, he's going to have 3,000 emails.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Kathy, thanks so much for the call to Radio Times. You were talking about this, Bridget. Re-entry can be so hard.
Reentry is really hard, and you know, that's not to say that that email, it can't be stressful and it can't be important. It certainly can, but oftentimes our work is not the email. You know, the work is responding to the crisis. And you're right that a lot of people, you know, come back from vacation and you do have that sort of relaxed feeling, and then you open up your inbox and it does feel like you haven't been away at all, and you've got 2 days and you've just got to power through. And a lot of people really dread that.
All right, let's get one more call. And before we address the issue of play, Steve is in Center City. Welcome to Radio Times, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Well, I was calling. First of all, I'm on vacation today, so that's why I get to listen to your show, and I'm enjoying packing the car. I have your book, Ms. Schulze. I really enjoy it and reading it. I'm the director of SAG-AFTRA in Philadelphia. It's the union of broadcasters and TV and radio and film workers. And so for our members, they telling them to take time off is really difficult. People feel like being away from the, you know, theater or the camera or the radio, they're going to miss out. But what we've achieved in our contracts is paid time off for part-timers based on the hours you've worked, which is really great. And we also make sure that every September we call our full-timers to remind them how much vacation time they have before the end of the year so they don't lose it, because a lot of people just lose track, and here it is December and they have 3 weeks left and they can't take it all off. So I do encourage people to make sure they use all their time, and you know, encourage others to do so as well.
And Steve, so in your experience, when people do take their vacation and when the part-timers do take their vacation, is this beneficial then?
You know what it is, because I think the point that it's the norm, that it's expected, that people are really encouraged, so it's not a badge of honor to skip your vacation, because then, you know, if you're skipping it, it puts pressure on other people. So I just think culturally in a lot of our shops, you know, what we try to achieve is the feeling that, no, you've earned it, you should take it, and why are you giving money, you know, back to the employer? This is your time. And, oh, by the way, if you're full-time and don't take vacation, then someone's not working for you, a part-timer. And that was a question I had, too, is, you know, what effect would it have on unemployment if people really did use all their time and companies did then reach out to temporary or part-time workers? You know, wouldn't that be more helpful? So I feel like you're not doing anyone a favor by not taking your time.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times.
Ahead of time and not being surprised and making arrangements.
We appreciate the call to Radio Times, Steve. Bridget, one of his points is very interesting. He managed to shift the cultural attitude. You should take vacation. You should take time off.
Right, and that goes back to that point that I was making, that the leaders and the culture set the leaders really set the tone for the culture, and that's so important, that if your culture really values that time off, you will actually take it, and you won't feel guilty, and you won't feel like you're going to lose out. And you know what he's talking about, sometimes it is difficult. You know, you're waiting for that call, you don't want to feel like you've missed it. So that in certain professions there is that sort of cost benefit analysis that you've got to make. But the other thing to do is understand how important that it is for your health, for the work that you're going to do when you come back, for connecting with your family, to really embrace it as a value and set up systems for when you're gone. So you either delegate the work or you set up a system for, so you won't miss that call. Like, I'm here, but if you really need to get me, you know, call so-and-so, or, you know,
sure.
Find a way that you've kind of created a plan that that will kind of ease some of that fear that you have that you're going to miss something.
Yeah, call so-and-so, but don't call me because I'm on vacation, right?
Right.
Let's look at injecting play into vacation. If I'm reading your book correctly, we Americans do not know how to play. We did when we were kids, but when we're adults, we don't know how to play, and it's critical.
Right. And I would argue that we are sort of losing what it means to play even for our kids. We're so structured. Our kids are so structured. We have so many activities that we ferry them to, that sense of just the joy in the moment where you kind of make stuff up as you go. And it's play purely for the sense of playing in itself. It doesn't have to be productive. It doesn't have to have an end. It's not necessarily something that's going to end up on your resume or your college application. We're so focused on the future when it comes to particularly the middle and upper class here in the United States.
You offer... go ahead. Finish your
thought. I was just going to say what I was surprised by, but it was very interesting to discover when I was reporting the book, is that there are a lot of different species of animals that play as juveniles, but they don't play as adults. But humans do, so much so that one philosopher thought that we shouldn't be Homo sapiens, the thinking or rational human, but Homo ludens, the playing human.
Hmm. You offer an interesting story about attending a time use conference. And Australian time use researcher Lynn Craig had indulged in a little leisure time that morning, and you had indulged in a little leisure time, but the attitudes, the definition of play was very different between the two of you. Tell that story.
Well, yeah, it's very funny. I was really, when I went to this time use conference, I was very much caught up in the swirl of overwhelm and always feeling I was a very guilty working mother. And if I wasn't working, I felt like I had to be with my kids and dedicating all my time to them and ferrying them around to different lessons so they wouldn't miss out on what I thought would be a good childhood because I was a working mother. And so I went to this time use conference and I was learning about leisure, and I really was trying to then, okay, I'm going to try to take leisure time. So I went for a run that morning, and I was training for a half marathon, and I went for a 10-mile run at 5 in the morning in Paris.
Good for
and
you.
It was beautiful. It was really a great run, and I came back, and I was feeling so proud of myself that I'd had leisure time. And Lynn Craig, who's a wonderful woman, a wonderful friend, an academic, waltzed in, and she'd gone shopping, and she'd had lunch with a friend, and she'd done all these like very relaxing, fun things that really appealed to her. And she was telling me what she'd done, and she goes, "What about you? What about your leisure?" And I said, "I ran 10 miles this morning." And she wrinkled her nose and she said, "Oh, purposive leisure."
There you go.
How American.
Purposive. I've never leisure. Said that word before. Purposive. All right, I'm even going to try. But we get the point. It's leisure that has a purpose to it, and that's not play. Play is something, and we are kind of running up against the clock here, but at another point, you tell the story about how you learned to manage a trapeze, and that is play, because you had to do, absolutely, there was nothing on your agenda, it was just sheerly for the joy of it.
Sheerly for the joy in the moment of swinging through the air. Yeah, there was no self-improvement, no nothing to prove. It was just being in the moment, and that's pure play.
All right, we could probably use another hour for this subject. We've been talking about vacation and why Americans in general don't take enough of it. Bridget Schulte is author of the book Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. She's an award-winning journalist for The Washington Post and The Washington Post Magazine. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And this reminder, our Facebook page is a lot of fun. You can also check out our podcasts by heading to our homepage, whyy.org/radiotimes. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us.